This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And good afternoon. Welcome into another Monday. It is July 18th. We're well into the dog days of summer, and I appreciate you joining us once again. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, and welcome into Market Talk here today. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a lot to discuss on the show today. Coming up, we're going to talk with Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing, get his thoughts and insight into the market trade here as we start off this week and we continue to watch the weather impact the markets as well as inflation worries, etc. We're going to be talking to Dwayne coming up here in just a little bit in segment two and three. At the end of the show today, we're going to talk with Kim Tudor, BASF Plant Health Technical Marketing Manager. We're going to have a conversation on disease progression in corn and how scouting isn't always enough. Looking forward to that coming up here at the end of the show today. But first, a lot of folks in the Western Corn Belt are wondering if the heat and dryness is here to stay for an extended period of time. Joining us now, Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien, as we take a look at this week's weather forecast. And Eric, hope you had a fantastic weekend. Thanks for joining us. I think that's the big question on a lot of people's minds right now. Is the heat and dryness here to stay for a while in the Western and Central Corn Belt?
Yeah, and the problem with that is that my answer is yes. The ridge is quite dominant. It's over the four corner states. I mean, we're starting to see temperatures in the plains reach up into the low, like one teens, possibly in certain places. And with that, we're also getting very windy conditions today throughout the plains, especially back into Montana. And the Western Corn Belt's just taking a beating. And it was the Western Corn Belt that only had like sporadic storms over the weekend. They didn't get the rain like the Eastern Corn Belt. And we should talk about that because Southern Wisconsin, Northern Illinois, Southern Illinois, and a lot of Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, pockets in Tennessee got these, I mean, just perfectly timed rain. Now, some of it was way too much. I saw some rainfall totals over 8 inches in some places causing some flooding. But you look at that weekend rainfall, and in some locations, it really outperformed what the models had said. But there were holes. I live in one in Champaign. It goes from Champaign right across central Illinois. We needed about three times as much as we got in certain places there to really buy us time. But you're right. The biggest issue is west, and it's going to continue to be west while the ridge sits over the west. And that's where the heat plus the high evaporation rates. I mean, they may top 3 inches this week throughout the plains just on that heat and the wind. So it's a pretty rough time of year to do that to the plains. And so we're going to see some crop loss and probably some complete crop loss in certain places.
Well, I know as well with that ridge, we've seen some of those ridge riding thunderstorms, and that may have been part of what we saw work into the Eastern Corn Belt here this week. As you look out at the forecast ahead, are we going to see some more of those ridge riders? Will we see any maybe convective thunderstorms try to pop up in that ridge? What are the chances of that?
Yeah, the chances of that are high. I mean, you get pop-up storms when it gets to 100 degrees, as long as there's no cap, you know, about a mile above our heads, it'll pop. But it locally delivers the rain. And if you follow it the next day with another day of 100 degree heat and wind, then you lose almost all that rain you got. So it's kind of a, you know, it's great that you can get those pop-up storms, but they don't last. But, you know, you ask about the ridge runners. I don't see any slowdown in the ridge riding storms. And the big reason for that is there's still a Canadian low pressure track. The jet stream's sitting right in southern Canada and just keeps rolling right there along the US-Canada border. So that drags weak fronts right over the top of the ridge. It meets the unstable air and storms pop. And the models are by design, they can't handle it very well. It's a difficult thing for them to predict. It's a resolution issue and an initialization issue, which means our skill as forecasters is to really hone in on those areas. And I tell you that parts of the upper Midwest getting through the Eastern Corn Belt are going to see better chances at storms. Now, how far to the west is that dividing line? Is it central Illinois or is it eastern Iowa? Or is it even as far west as western Iowa? A lot of folks would be happy if I gave you the latter and we put it all the way in western Iowa, but I think it's going to be farther east there. I'd be watching the Mississippi River as a dividing line going forward.
Eric, as well, you know, you mentioned some of the drought creeping in or some of the ridge creeping in. We're getting some flash drought in some areas of the plains as well. And I would have to think if the heat continues, that's going to exacerbate itself moving forward.
Yeah. And I think the hardest hit states are going to be Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, and Arkansas. If I had to narrow it down to a certain group of states, but the surrounding areas are going to be at risk as well. And we will see in the Corn Belt highs getting into the mid to upper 90s at times as we work our way through the end of July. And as you and I have discussed, we're a couple weeks late, maybe two and a half weeks late on pollination. So this is the wrong time of day to do that. A wrong time of year, excuse me. I was thinking day because it's those overnight lows we want to get down there in the 60s at least. And some of the forecast models are stretching those overnight lows into the low 70s as far north as Iowa. So this is going to be a situation where once we're finished with this, we'll see the true damage extent as we go into the month of August, because still in the background, La Nina has got a grip on this pattern. I mean, that's why we've seen the increased risk of drought in the midsection of the country, and it's just kicking away. I'm impressed. Way to go, atmosphere. You really got me on this one, because that La Nina has survived and continues to look as though it's going to keep around for this fall and even early winter.
Eric, you post your daily newsletter for folks to take a look at. And I know on the Monday one here, we saw that new summer fall outlook from Columbia University you put in the newsletter. Can you highlight that a little bit? What are we seeing with that new outlook?
Yeah, you know, they're a great research institution, and they're just one of the groups around the country that will distill down all the weather models and then put it into a statistical analysis to see where there's greatest risk. What's interesting about that today is that Columbia University for August, September, and October, either the model spread was so large or the signals were so weak that they do not have a really well-defined precipitation pattern. What I'm watching for is an active hurricane season. I think that's going to be the key thing to figuring out August and September, is how much of that moisture gets delivered to the lower, maybe mid-Mississippi River Valley. How far into the mid-south does it get? And does it really take over in the southeast? Because there's a lot of indicators that this should be an active hurricane season with multiple storms probably coming in succession. I have no evidence to overturn that at this point. But I would tell you, the La Nina would say drier fall. I mean, that's typically what they do. You just tend to get a drier fall with more active hurricanes in the southeast. But at this point, I'll be honest, I was a bit surprised at the lack of a signal in their forecast. And so for those of you that get that report or want to sign up for it, take a look. That's an important bit of information coming from Columbia University.
Eric, before we run out of time, any other final thoughts you have for us on the weather forecast this week?
Yes, watch Europe. The heat wave that started last week in Europe is raging this week from the Iberian Peninsula, which is where Spain and Portugal is, through Central Europe. The dryness extends all the way to Ukraine. And so it's the same situation. They're in summer just like we are. And therefore, this is causing problems. And much like the Mid-South and Plains, parts of France have had multiple flash drought scenarios setting up this summer. So I imagine we're going to continue to hear news on the downside of things there in terms of crop production going forward, because it is hot. It's really hot there.
Well, we appreciate the analysis and the insight as always with that. Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien, thanks for joining us this week, and have a great week, sir.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass of Nutrien. Coming up next, Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing, back with more market talk on the way right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now as we take a look at plenty of green across the grain screen here today to start the week, we say good afternoon to Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing joining us here today on Market Talk. Dwayne, good afternoon, man. How are you? Hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah, doing really well. Another weekend of watching some youth baseball, so feel like I'm dragging a little bit today, but that's right. The market was not dragging, though, was it? A lot of green on the screen today. It was nice to see.
Well, you know, you spent the weekend out watching youth baseball. I'm sure you got a taste of that heat there in the in your neck of the woods, the Western Plains, the Western Corn Belt, and that I don't know. That seemed to be the biggest reason, or at least I could find, behind the rally in the grain markets here to start the week, which I think surprised a lot of folks in the trade, Dwayne.
Well, I think so, because if you wanted to build on a weather premium, I guess the biggest question was, why didn't we rally last week then, right? You know, we had 6 to 10 and 8 to 14 day maps that showed hot and dry through the Midwest. Any other year, that would have rallied this market last week, and instead the market was down rather sharply. You know, more focus on those outside markets, the equity markets, and fund liquidation in general. So when I saw the forecast continued hot and dry on Sunday afternoon, I really questioned which way we're going. And evidently the experts did too, because you heard some higher opening calls and you heard some lower opening calls. And the market was kind of all aboard last night to start the week, but had some nice big gains today. Especially I felt like it was led by the soybean and wheat complex, which kind of makes sense to me. The soybean market, you know, has another big month of weather in front of us here throughout August. And in wheat, I feel like that's the first market that should bottom when we find our harvest lows here as wheat harvest progresses on. And I think we're getting to that point, but we've still got about another 2 weeks of some solid seasonal tendencies for the market to go lower, especially the corn market. So I'm not ready to say, you know, the lows are in and it's time to buy. I don't think we're quite there yet. I think we're looking for a choppy trade ahead this week.
Well, and I think as well, you mentioned this to me before we went on the air, we lost a little bit off the highs of the day here at the close. So one has to wonder if that's a sign of what is to come here and some more of that choppy action. Maybe it was some profit taking. I heard some funds buying up some contracts today of pretty much everything, corn, wheat, beans, bean oil. So it was interesting to see us lose a little bit of premium here at the close as well today, Dwayne. I think that indicates your thoughts about maybe a choppy trade this week.
I think so too. I was asked earlier this morning, is this a rally off of the weather market or a rally off of the macroeconomics? And this, at that point, the stock market was up pretty good. And the stock market started to fade in the afternoon session here. And so did our market. So I kind of wonder, maybe it's more outside market influence than anything here. But I was surprised too. You know, well, even the weather is really questionable, right? Because you got the Eastern Corn Belt. I did an interview with a few different brokers in different states this morning, and the Eastern Corn Belt was all smiles. You could hear it through the phone line that, you know, we got surprising rains over the weekend. Things look much better. And then as you got over here, it's like, well, things look good, but we could sure use a shot of rain. But I mean, parts of South Dakota got a rain too. You know, thunderstorms, they're hit and miss. One guy gets it, the next guy doesn't. So it's kind of tough.
It is kind of tough. And I think about just, you know, watching this weather forecast again, it's all going to depend. It could change on us here. I mean, yeah, we have the 6 to 10 day, the 14 day models that are saying hot and dry, and that ridge is set up. But if we get some of those ridge riding thunderstorms, we get some of those convective storms that could pop up on us. And I've seen as well, yes, we are getting hot. We are starting to get stressed in some areas, but by no means is this forecast, it doesn't feel like it is a crop killing forecast, at least in the sense of if it doesn't last for a month, if it goes for 2 weeks and then we catch some rains, we might lose a little bit, but it doesn't feel like it's a crop killer, Dwayne.
No, it doesn't feel like 2012, right? I think that's what everyone kind of wants to know. And like today on our farm, Northeast South Dakota, we're going to get, you know, as hot as we've been all year long. We're going to be in the upper 90s and a heat index, but the wind's going to blow and yeah, that'll dry some things up. And then tomorrow, a high of 84. I'm like, oh, well, that's, you'd think that would bring in some rain, but it doesn't look like it. But it's not, like you said, it's not a killing crop forecast. It's not 2012. I think what we're doing every day as we move on, we probably raise the bottom end of the yield estimate, and, you know, maybe we're not going above trend line and we're maybe lowering, you know, we're not going to raise 187 bushel national average corn crop, but we're narrowing it in. And as we do that, the funds tend to take the weather premium out of the market. And that's what happened the last couple of weeks. And, you know, we still got this recession talk and that out there. And, you know, last week there was some talk, maybe we'd get some exports out of the Black Sea area, but Putin had to agree to it. And right away, I kind of rolled my eyes like, he's not going to agree to any of that. And there was talk of that this morning that he's not going to agree to this terms and a agreement that Ukraine and Turkey and Russia are going to export any wheat out. So there's still a bullish story there out there too. So a lot of choppy trade and kind of buckle up, up 30 one day, down 30 the next could easily happen.
And I wonder as well, thinking right here in the short term on the corn side, corn pollination, you know, we planted late in so many areas. How much are we delayed with pollination? Are we, you know, are we just starting it this week? Is it going to be next week? Have we already started? I think one has to wonder that question as well as we move into this week and watch the forecast, Dwayne.
Right. Yeah. According to a lot of the different brokers I talked to in different states, the Eastern Corn Belt is just starting to tassel this week. And now with the rain, they feel like, you know, they're not going to be 100 degrees. So they feel like they're going to go into tasseling actually, or pollination, in a really good situation. Talking to Minnesota, they're about like the Dakotas. South Dakota, I drove up and down the state this weekend. A lot of tassels just starting to shoot out. So later this week, it'll be pollinating. Now, once you cross the state line and go into North Dakota, it's like half of Minnesota is the same way too. That's where the delayed planting happened, right? And that corn is well behind and not pollinating yet. But this is exactly what that crop needs, though, is this hot weather so it can play catch up. We planted a lot of corn June 8th and 9th up here, and it's like, ooh, that's really late. But it's catching up rather well. If we can get that stuff to the finish line without a frost taking some yield away, then, well, this hot and dry was kind of what it needed to push it along, too. So, weather is a double-edged sword. It's hard to predict. We'll have crop conditions later this afternoon. And if you're really wondering, and how is the national crop doing, tell you what, take a look at one state. Take a look at Iowa. And right now they're 80% good to excellent, or above 80%. So as a whole, as Iowa grows, so does the U.S. corn crop.
Dwayne, I think as well, we take a look at corn, look at beans, even the wheat market. We see a rally like we do today, and we question, you know, what exactly was the real reason behind it? Will it last? But it feels like this is an opportunity, if needed, to maybe lock in some floors here and protect yourself in case we move to the downside here later this week, Dwayne.
I think so. I think for the most part, a lot of guys have sold as much as they're going to sell. It was hard for me to get guys to sell more as this market went down. I had a lot of guys this weekend ask, hey, the market will come back, right? And that was kind of a signal to me of like, I didn't sell enough. It'll come back later, right? And I knew there was no convincing them, you need to sell it here. I'm a little more bearish probably in the short term. I just feel like these funds just want to liquidate out, get a little deeper into the recession, see where we're at. And then money flow could come definitely back into this market. And I think that's what happens this winter. So you're right. If you haven't sold any and you've got a pop, or if you have old crop corn and beans left, get it gone. The basis is still very strong. And that won't happen as you get into harvest. Remember, even if it's a short crop, you're not going to run out of corn as we're harvesting.
Well, and a great point you make there, that basis has remained strong. And I had heard some last week about some producers holding on to some old crops still, some old crop corn especially, and just those gambling bushels. And with July going off the board and moving to the September contract now, we lost a good chunk of premium there, but basis is still remains strong. To me, it just seems like a no-brainer. If you got it, it's probably time to get rid of it, Dwayne.
It does to me too, because, you know, typical broker hedging even my answers to some of these tough marketing questions is, if I tell a guy to sell his last remaining old crop bushels and I'm wrong and it rallied, I bet he's got a lot of new crop he hasn't sold yet too. So it's a win-win for him to me. So no, the old crop needs to be done and gone. I think so as well.
And again, that's Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing joining us here today on Market Talk. We'll continue our discussion with Dwayne coming up here after the break. Before we head to break, though, let's take a look at closing numbers today. September corn up 8, 612 and a quarter. December up 7, 610 and three quarters. August soybeans up 31 and a quarter, 1497 and a quarter. November beans up 38, 1380 and a quarter. August bean meal up 350 a ton, 434.50. Soybean oil for August up 312 points today, 6320. September Chicago wheat 36 higher, 812 and three quarters. December up 35 and a half, 829 and a half. September Kansas City wheat up 36 and a half at 874. Spring wheat September up 32 and a quarter at 939. December up 30 and a half, 950 and a quarter. Live cattle for August up 70, 135.62. October up 105, 140.60. Feeder cattle for August up 32, 176.67. September down 25, 179.42. August hogs up 230 today, 112.12. October up 177 at 94.37. We'll continue our conversation with Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing coming up after the break. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Get the coolest savings on propane during the warmest months with the Summer Fill program from FS. The FS Propane Summer Fill Program offers customers the opportunity to fill their propane tanks during the summer when demand is less and prices are typically lower. From periodic propane system inspections to convenient payment options, you'll appreciate what FS dedicated propane professionals can do for you. Contact your local FS member cooperative today or visit fspropane.com.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk on this Monday, July 18th. Jesse Allen with you here. Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing continues with us as well. He is our guest analyst on the show here for this Monday afternoon. Well, let's shift gears a little bit. Talk the wheat market a little more. You mentioned wheat earlier in the show. To me, it feels like wheat kind of tends to linger here during this key kind of U.S. row crop production time. We do have some of that harvest pressure still going, though, as you alluded to, in parts of the Plains states. But I look at wheat. I look at what we've taken off the market, especially pretty much all that war premium. And I look here throughout, though, still really solid numbers. Spring wheat pushing its way back higher into the mid nines on the board. KC wheat, Chicago wheat, you know, around that 850 or higher mark for the most part. I mean, the wheat market here as well, looking still fairly solid. Like maybe not. We found a floor here. But again, I think there's a lot of questions to be answered still there.
There is. It's hard to pick the bottom, but I know that's our job. So we gave it a shot last week, and we exited hedges in wheat last week, last Thursday afternoon or something was when we put it out there to our clients, the time to get out. So I'm maybe not bullish to like, we need to buy the wheat market here, but I think we need to exit shorts. And a couple of reasons why, you know, a couple of weeks back, we saw Egypt step up and start buying some wheat. Yes, not from us, but just the fact that they felt like the price was low enough. But last week's export sales for the U.S., we had a huge export sale. I think the biggest in 10 years or something. Mm-hmm. And China was the big buyer. That's enough for me to say, I don't want to be short anymore. So disappointed in the market that day. It performed rather poorly on Thursday and then kind of a sharp bounce on Friday. So I think this market is, if it's not at the lows, it's very close. It's time to exit the shorts. And like I said, if you're combining your wheat right now, just throw it in the bin and I think forget about it for a while. You go over to that Ukraine-Russia war. To me, this is when actually we start to lose the bushels. Last year, you know, the story fired us up and rallied us $4, right? But that was more of a story. The winter wheat had already been planted. Now you go over there, wheat's worth about $2, corn's worth about $1. The war continues on as Russia progresses slowly across the country. What incentive at that price is there to go out and plant winter wheat? So I think there's a big production loss coming in the 2023 crop. And so this may be a low, and then we go back and test those highs, you know, $4 or $5 up from here.
Good things to consider. I think as well, I mentioned this to you before we went on the air today, just kind of this push-pull between the weather forces and the fundamentals basically in the grain markets versus the macro side. And I know you mentioned this a little bit on the show as well, but I mean, for the most part, to start this week, the macro markets, outside markets, fairly supportive, the dollar pulling back a little bit. Some of those fears maybe easing. The Fed might only do 75 basis points versus a full point. 100 basis points, crude oil rallying back above $100 a barrel. So it just feels to me outside markets supportive today, but this back and forth, this push pull, it feels like it could continue for some time here in the markets. Would you agree?
I would agree. Sadly, I'm going to say, because it's hard for somebody like me to understand the macros on a day-to-day basis, if I'm just being honest. And if corn and soybeans are going to follow them on a day-to-day basis, it makes it really hard for me to predict our markets. So you then got to kind of step back and take a bigger look at it. Look at your spreadsheets. You know, if you're profitable, get some hedges on, you know. And I understand, well, I'm not sure of my yield out there. Well, just assume a trend line and pretty good yield and then plug that into your spreadsheet. And like you said, if you haven't sold anything by now, take a look at that. It's still a good profit. So yeah, the macro thin is definitely still tied in these markets, and that's going to make it difficult on this day-to-day stuff. And I think that's what the funds, that's why they don't like our markets right now and exiting, because they're just unsure of the whole global demand picture. We also saw some some import data information from China. I mean, so far this year, they're not importing a whole lot of commodities. So obviously, the COVID lockdowns and recession is having an effect there too. And we know, I mean, they're the hungry hippo in the room, right? You know, if they're going to eat up and buy all of our soybeans, we can be bullish commodities. And if they're not, like they haven't so far this calendar year, well, maybe we should be a little bearish still.
Well, and you bring up China, that's a big concern, I think, in the market trade, especially in the ag commodities. Their GDP growth, the weakest since before the pandemic last week. It's just what is going on with the Chinese economy is a pretty hefty concern across the market trade, Dwayne.
It's a huge concern. Like I said, they're the buyer. Now, I think it was a lot of the COVID lockdowns. I think we've all gotten so tired of hearing COVID lockdowns that, you know, especially in this country, that when it happened in China, we kind of just pushed it aside. It's not a big deal. And yes, they still eat, but they don't go out to the restaurants and eat and have the little bit extra waste, right, that gets thrown away. So it is still bad when they have COVID lockdowns there. Now, a couple of weeks ago, they said, you know, we're done with lockdowns. And then, of course, about 5 days later, now we got to start again. So it's something to keep an eye on there. It's a big deal, and their economy is a big deal. And there's also some tensions over the weekend about Taiwan, and that's something to keep an eye on. You know, we can start to rally the bean market here thinking we need a weather premium, but if China's going to start a new trade war with us, well, then guess what? They're not going to buy a lot of beans from us. So, man, it's going to be tough if you can't tell in the short term. This market's going to stay pretty violent. So maybe, you know, watch the technicals, watch the overbought, oversold conditions, and trade accordingly.
Let's talk livestock, Dwayne, before we run out of time today. Hog market looking strong again here to start the week. Cutouts looking solid again. This hog market, I've been curious. I've been talking about this, wanting to see what the August contract would do with July coming off the board. And it appears, at least today, trying to make a run up to where that August level was.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? And I think you nailed it with the cutouts. Seasonally, we're not supposed to rally this time of year. We're supposed to go lower, and the market seems like we're going to do a counter-seasonal rally here. Cutouts are strong. Domestic demand is strong. China's not buying a lot of pork, obviously. So I think it's hard to imagine us doing some sort of crazy run above 115 to 120. But futures are rallying. And you know, the heat maybe has a little bit something to do, and not as much in the hogs as it is in cattle, but, you know, that should continue to keep the weights down a little bit anyway, or put some more pressure, which means less production. So, and, you know, it's not like corn got that cheap, so we're want to move the hogs as quickly as possible. But just say I'm impressed with this hog market and watching the cash and cutouts, and as long as they rally, I can't be bearish.
And I mentioned, I mixed up there. I said where the August was. I meant the July. I think everyone, you knew where I was going with that. do you think this is a spot to get into this hog market, maybe? At least lock in a floor with the way it's been rallying, Dwayne?
Boy, you know, it's a good question. If you've got some near-term hogs coming in, I'd say yes. Look at some short-term put options, some LRP insurance type. And even into the winter months, there maybe I'm not that bearish, but there I would do something that keeps the upside open, because we start to talk the cattle market. Really curious if we're setting up for a real bullish run here in this cattle market with less inventory coming down the line soon.
And that's a great point you make, as I was going to segue to cattle. You mentioned the heat too. I think that's a factor. This cattle market, to me, feels like it's just been bubbling under the surface here, waiting for inventory to kind of contract, to your point, before it makes a run to the upside again.
Yeah, I think that's what we're setting up to do here. I mean, last week, maybe the fat cash market was down a little bit, but that shouldn't have shocked anyone. When you see the 6 to 10 and the 8 to 14 and the hot temps right across feedlot country. Yes, it's not hot everywhere, but main feedlot country, to me, it was. That cash market, I think, was lower because you had more feedlot managers saying, yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and sell these critters now before it gets too hot and I have some death loss, right? So I think that's why you had a little bit lower market there. But boy, box beef, choice box beef above 270 again at midday here. So demand is really great. I think that cash market bounces back because the packers are going to need them. We had a big kill last week, and it seems like those numbers are still there, but we keep waiting for this pullback in inventory, which we've been broadcasting and talking about for almost a year. I think it's coming. I think it's coming this fall. Luckily, I have been one that has been saying it's just going to be later than normal. So I do think it's coming, and Packers, I think, are pretty short bought and want to buy it. But the real big thing in this cattle market this summer has been the lighter weights, the light air carcass weights. That happens when you have really high feed costs, and then when you have really high temps, you know, they just aren't going to put the weight on like you'd like them to. I mean, it's still amazing genetics and amazing feed out there, but they're just not the big, heavy critters we used to have. So that means just less product. So I'm really bullish this cattle market, which is odd for me to be that way if I'm talking recession and everything else. Can we really rally the livestock market into recession? But I think we're going to.
Well, and there's a lot of things to watch and consider. We could sit and speculate what a rally could look like, but we don't need to do that today. Dwayne, before we run out of time, any final thoughts you have for us on the show?
No, I think we wrapped it up really well. You know, let's see how those crop conditions are this afternoon. You know, don't be shocked if it doesn't drop hard. You know, maybe only a 1% drop, but that's pretty seasonal tendency. A lot of rain in the Eastern Corn Belt. You might see some states actually improve over there.
Well, Dwayne, if folks need some marketing advice, I know they can reach out to you at Bolt Marketing very easily. How can they do that?
Yeah, just call us here directly, 605-448-2365, or they can always check us out online at boltmarketingllc.com.
Well, with that, Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jesse.
And again, that is Dwayne Bussey of Bolt Marketing. Learn more about him, boltmarketingllc.com. Outside markets, here's a work to the afternoon close there. Crude oil up 491 a barrel, 102.50. S&P down 17, NASDAQ down 71, the Dow Jones down 91 points, and the U.S. dollar index is down 69 at 107.21. Coming up, we're going to have a conversation with Kim Tudor of BASF. Going to talk about detecting diseases in your corn crop and why scouting may not be enough. Great conversation on the way next as we continue with more market talk. We'll be back on the way right after this.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us today, BASF Plant Health Technical Marketing Manager Kim Tudor is with us. Kim, great to have you on the program today. How are you?
Hi, Jesse. I am well. Thankful for the opportunity to be here. Hope you are.
Well, I am thankful that you made the time for us as well, and I'm doing well. Appreciate it. Let's dive in. We're talking corn disease, and you know, it's something that this time of year, I think we always talk a lot about scouting and how important that is once we're into the heart of the growing season. But I know sometimes scouting is not always enough when it comes to getting out into our fields. So talk just a little bit about, you know, the importance of scouting, but also maybe how that's not always enough here, especially when we start to see diseases in our fields, Kim.
Sure. So scouting is critical, right? And in particular, you know, when I put on my crop consultant or my agronomist hat, you know, scouting for weeds is one thing. You see the weed, you identify the weed. Okay, I need to select the appropriate herbicide to kill that weed. But with diseases, it's a little bit more complicated than that. And that's really because of this idea of a latent period. So all diseases have a latent period. And this latent period is the time between initial infection and reproduction. And every disease has a different latent period. For example, if we're talking about frog eye leaf spot in soybeans, it's 7 to 10 days. Similarly, for southern rust in corn, it's 7 to 10 days. Or the infamous tar spot that I know is top of mind for a lot of growers this season as well as in seasons past actually has a really long latent period, anywhere from 14 to 20 days. So that's 14 to 20 days that disease can be inside the plants within the field, wreaking havoc, producing toxins, reducing photosynthetic capability, and ultimately reducing yield before we ever even see a lesion or a symptom with our own naked eye.
Talk to me a little bit as well. You know, you mentioned some of these diseases, and I have to think that, you know, as we get into the key pollination time frame here for corn growers, you know, depending on their location, maybe they're dry, maybe they've had some rain. What are you seeing and hearing about maybe some certain disease pressures across the country? Is there one thing that stands out more than another here this growing season? What are you hearing across the country, Kim?
So talking about corn specifically, specifically, two diseases that I think are probably most top of mind and I've heard the most chatter about over the last couple weeks is southern rust. So that started showing up in the South several weeks ago and is slowly making its way northward and is definitely causing some issues this season. But the one that really is making a lot of noise is that of tar spot. It's already been documented. I believe I heard yesterday they found it up in Wisconsin. You know, and tar spot's one of those diseases. It's very different from southern rust. You know, southern rust generally blows in from the south and makes its way northward. Tar spot overwinters in the soil and in with corn residue. And in addition to overwintering, it can also blow in from surrounding areas. So it's one of those diseases where if you've had tar spot in the past or your neighbor's field or, you know, the surrounding counties have had it, it's going to make its way in. It is a very opportunistic disease and really takes advantage of the fact that if it's been there before, you can trust it's going to come back with a vengeance again the following year.
Now, I think as well, if we start to see some of these diseases pop up in our corn field, obviously we are looking at tight margins this year. We're looking for the best ROI on our crops, looking at our corn fields this year. If we start to see these diseases pop up, what are some things we need to remember to try and mitigate the effect that disease is going to have on our corn crop this year, Kim?
I would say first and foremost, growers know their fields best. They know their fields better than anybody else, right? So it's important as you're planning your season, as you're going throughout your season as a grower, stay in touch with your consultant, stay in touch with your retailer. Take into consideration your field history and your production history. Did you have this, you know, a particular disease in the past? Did you have tar spot last year? Have you heard noise from your neighbors that they're starting to see it pop up in theirs? And then it's really important to have those planned preventative fungicide applications in place. You know, retailers, aerial applicators, everybody gets busy, and this year is no exception. And so having that conversation early, getting that product, that fungicide product booked, and going ahead and planning those applications, I feel like are going to be critical. With regard to your portion of the question about return on investment, you know, I feel like in years past, fungicide applications, you know, it's typically one of the last, if not the last, passes or trips across the field, right? And it's very easy to say, well, I've already invested X amount of money, you know, in this crop this season. I don't think I want to spend any more money. But with some of these more costly and quite frankly, atrocious diseases like tar spot, you know, we've seen, and last year was no exception, yield losses anywhere of 50 bushels an acre or more if you're not treating that corn crop with a plant health fungicide product. And so if you take, you know, 50 bushels an acre, let's just say for ease of numbers, let's say you've booked your corn, just for ease of calculation, $7 a bushel, you know, that's $350 an acre that you could potentially lose. So by and large, these fungicide applications truly do pay for themselves.
Well, fantastic thoughts to consider. Kim, any other final thoughts you want to share with us before we run out of time today?
No, just encourage folks, have those conversations early. Don't wait to be reactive. It's really important to be proactive. And I would also just encourage anybody that's listening, you know, let's say you're potentially in a drier environment, or in an environment in which you don't have a really high disease pressure, just remember that when you utilize a BASF plant health product, there are other benefits that come along with that fungicide application other than disease control, and that improves growth efficiency as well as environmental stress mitigation.
Well, I know as well, if folks need advice, they need help, they have questions, they can reach out to their local BASF representative. With that, BASF Plant Health Technical Marketing Manager Kim Tudor, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today and have a great week.
Thanks, Jesse. Same to you.
And that's going to do it for Market Talk here on this Monday, July 18th. Coming up tomorrow, we'll talk with the team at agmarket.net. Have a great one. I'm Jesse Allen. Talk to you on Tuesday.
Get the coolest savings on propane during the warmest months with the Summer Fill Program from FS. The FS Propane Summer Fill Program offers customers the opportunity to fill their propane tanks during the summer when demand is less and prices are typically lower. From periodic propane system inspections to convenient payment options, you'll appreciate what FS Dedicated Propane Professionals can do for you. Contact your local FS member cooperative today or visit fspropane.com.